Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your sick co-host, David Duncan, and with me is the
Countess Erin O'Brien.
Countess, you sure it's not Countess? What's the pussy?
Regina.
Regina, not what's the pussy? I'm sorry.
No, it's Countess Erin O'Brien.
Countess Erin O'Brien.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, hello.
Yes, hello everyone. If I sound strange and weird, it is because I am ill this week. Me and Erin are not in the same room, so I do not get him ill.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks, Dave.
I usually handle his drinks that I make, and I'm like, I probably shouldn't be doing that if, you know, I don't want to get him sick.
Yeah, unfortunately, I've been kind of under the weather too, but I'm feeling okay.
You sound good.
I've been muscling through, but it's same kind of thing, just not as severe as you,
Mr. Basie.
Count Basie.
Countess Basie, sounds very good, nah?
Yeah. So hey, this episode we are talking about a special two-parter, Elementary Dear Data episode and Ship in a Bottle. Elementary Dear Data takes place in season 2, episode 3, which aired December 5th, 1988. And then Ship in the Bottle, Next Generation episode, happens season 6, episode 12, and that aired January 25th, 1993. We're doing it back to back because we have the awesome holograph character, Professor Moriarty.
Professor Moriarty and
James Moriarty.
If you remember way, way back, if you're one of those original listeners, we said we do a Holograms Gone Wild, and we can dub this a Holograms Gone Wild, doing two hologram episodes in one.
Yeah. But this one was really special, I thought, because we got to focus on a character, and I think there's, I mean, I distinctly remember after watching this episode, especially the last one, Ship in the Bottle, I felt that there was all these huge moral dilemmas with this, and the way they left it, I kind of felt like they didn't ever resolve it. And then when we get Voyager, we get the Doctor, I wonder what happened to James Moriarty after that.
Well, I read somewhere or heard on another podcast that somehow there was a pitch to get Moriarty on Voyager.
Now, that would be sweet.
And the reason it didn't go, from what I heard or read, or I can't remember where it was, I don't remember my source, but I remember reading this or hearing this somewhere, that the idea was that Deep Space, Quark somehow acquired, or someone in Deep Space Nine acquired that cube that had, like, the Moriarty program going down, and, you know, somehow got smuggled aboard Voyager, while Voyager was stationed at Deep Space Nine before they went out and got stuck in the Delta Quadrant. And then, you know, they'd of course have a holodeck episode where, you know, Moriarty comes up and causes problems, and there's a whole new people, like, they're, and then they have to deal with, you know, it's like, oh crap. And right, we're in the Delta Quadrant. And then we have, oh, and then especially if it came up, like, you know, later in season 4 with the Doctor, like, maybe he tried to hijack the Doctor's, you know, mobile emitter. I mean, there'd be so much crazy stuff. And the reason it didn't happen is because, from what I remember, is that the Voyager staff and the Deep Space Nine staff, like, didn't get along.
Mm.
Like, there was, like, a rivalry or something going on. And that's so because of that, it never made it into it.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, I knew. I mean, there is some sort of rivalry there because Ronald D. Moore was only associated with Voyager for a very short stint, and I heard things that went down, you know, that people were threatened to be fired if anyone ever sided with Ronald D. Moore on anything.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I'm just like, So, like, you know, Ronald D. Moore had a really short stint on Voyager, and then he went on to do Battlestar Galactica, which was great until season three.
Right, yeah. Yeah, but still, I mean...
But, Sam, something went on between them. I don't know exactly what it is. There's a Deep Space Nine documentary coming out that was kickstarted a couple months ago, or Indiegogo a couple months ago. So maybe that'll shed light onto it. Maybe that'll be touched on, too. I have no idea. But it'd be interesting to hear if there was anything like that officially from the people.
Right. Yeah, it just would have been cool to see if anything like that would have been attempted at some point. So
the actor who plays Moriarty in these episodes, like, he is my favorite Moriarty he's my favorite on screen Moriarty ever, and he wasn't even in a pure Sherlock Holmes thing.
Right.
He just plays Moriarty so good. He's such a good actor, and he's got the look, and no one else I've seen play Moriarty, like, it's not the same.
Well, you know, everyone's got their own take, of course.
Sure, sure. But, like, this guy was, like, born to play Moriarty.
Right, yeah. I enjoyed his take on Moriarty, and I enjoyed both stories. Admittedly, Ship in the Bottle is a far stronger episode, but Elementary, My Dear Data, it definitely sets everything up. So
yeah, it does. Well, Elementary, My Dear Data, the director was really pissed because he got screwed over. Like, I think they cut a day in the memory alpha, so they cut a day off shooting, which made the shoot miserable. He was scared that was going to ruin the episode. Hmm. So, I mean, if they had that extra day of shooting, maybe it would have been a little bit better.
Yeah, it probably would have been.
But it was interesting reading the time constraints on him, and they built that whole London set was, like, you know, a soundstage set built from the ground up for this episode. That's a huge set for just a single episode. It's pretty
yeah, amazing. absolutely.
And all the detail on it too is absolutely gorgeous set.
Right. I checked over news for anything with Discovery or anything else, and I hadn't seen anything really noteworthy to talk about. The one thing I did want to just bring up that I did see that I know I posted onto our site was the Star Trek RPG, Borg's Cube Box.
Oh, yeah. Is that a brand new game, or are they just repackaging it?
I don't ever remember seeing this game before, so this is brand new. So this is totally... I don't know how well it, you know, plays, but it just looks wonderful. And I think it's set in the Next Generation era. So
that sounds cool.
Yeah, it's a role-playing game for the Star Trek. It's from Modifus Star Trek Adventures, and it comes in a big Borg cube.
I think that's, like, just the best box for it. It's a big Borg cube. I think that's awesome. I love Star Trek Catan also. It's really fun.
Yeah. Well, I used to play when I was younger the Star Trek FASA role-playing game, but besides the ship-to-ship battle, the character generation stuff was a little clunky. So... Mm-hmm. But this looks pretty cool, so definitely check that out if you get a chance. I think I'd like to order that and see if we could ever get a game.
We should do a game and, like, podcast it. Maybe get Robbie or Josiah or somebody, you know, get a couple people together and just do that fucking episode.
It would be wonderful.
That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, I would love to do that just to have some fun with it.
Robbie, Josiah, you're signed up.
Right. I guess they don't have a choice.
I hope they don't. Hopefully they'll willingly participate.
Right. So should we get started with our episode breakdowns?
Are you excited?
All right. So I'll do a little briefer than normal because we're doing two episodes.
I said eyesore. No.
Eyesore. I have an eyesore. In my vagina.
In my vagina.
So
my neck looks like a vagina.
Oh, no. Is that a Trump joke?
No, that's a fat bastard joke from Austin Powers.
Oh, they Trump.
So it's when it's at the end of the second or third one, he, like, fat bastard lost all his weight. And he's like, my neck looks like a vagina.
Oh, Jesus. I forgot about that. anyways, moving forward. So the Enterprise is going to be meeting up with the the HMS Victory. Why is it the HMS Victory? Oh, no, it's not the HMS. It's just the USS Victory. But Geordi served under Captain Zimbada as an ensign. And so he constructs a HMS Victory sailing ship
in engineering, not in his quarters, not, you know, in like, you know, the rec room, in engineering.
Let's hope the ship doesn't get any bumps along the way like they often do.
Oh, yeah, that. And, you know, like, people are trying to work. Like, I can't, like, I, everyone must have been so pissed at him. He's, like, sitting there, like, trying to build this intricate ship in the middle of engineering. Like, I just,
He's got band saws, yeah, and he's sanding pieces down.
He's got lacquer everywhere.
I know, he's lacquering and gluing, and people are like, dude, that, like, smell is, like, really strong.
And I just love how, like the captain's log was like, yeah, we're here 3 days early. We have nothing to do. Like, this could have been, like, a multi-part episode of, like, all the chaos that happens on the Enterprise, like, when they're waiting around for 3 days and there's nothing to do. It would be great, like, because this one kind of focuses mostly on, you know, Pulaski, Data, and Geordi. You know, what about Riker? What about his crazy adventures? So is he, like, chasing Troy over the ship? Who knows? We didn't get to see that fun stuff.
Yeah, we should have seen more of that. Well, maybe Riker was just playing his trombone.
Maybe. Serenading Troy.
So, after Geordi shows... After Geordi shows Data his ship that he's made, he says, but we're going to do something else. We're going to do a Sherlock Holmes adventure on the holodeck. So they rush over to the holodeck. They get into their clothes, and there should have been like a montage for this, like an 80s montage.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah.
Them getting dressed. Yeah. Although they probably had to paint Data in places other than his face, neck, and hands.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. Well, anyways.
No time for that.
No time for that. So they enter into the holodeck, and Data, unfortunately, he just kind of blows through all the answers to all the mysteries that are presented in front of him, because Data has memorized all the Sherlock Holmes adventures and stories. So there's nothing that's going to surprise Data. So when Geordi asks for a Sherlock Holmes adventure, unfortunately, it pulls up one of their stories and Data just figures it out right away.
And then Geordi storms off. Like, he doesn't even explain what he's doing. And, like, Data's, like, chasing him through the ship. I'm like, wouldn't you have just, like, explained it then instead of waiting to go to 10 forward to explain it?
Right.
It just seems kind of a strange leap, but I guess you had to have the conversation in front of Pulaski so she could, you know, be a dick to Data.
Yeah, so in 10 forward, while they're still in their Victorian garb, they're talking. Geordi's explaining to Data why you can't just – it's no fun just to blow through the whole mystery without going through the at least the motions of it, even though you know all the answers to it. So that's when Dr. Pulaski says to Geordi, well, he can't. He's just a computer. He's not going to make any leaps to figure out the mystery. So,
but then, you know, Geordi does point out that deductive reasoning is one of Data's stronger suits.
Yeah,
like,
so
he does have the ability. It's just that since he knows everything, he's just going to, you know, go to the end.
So Pulaski's just being kind of an ass.
I don't like Pulaski. This is like why I don't like Pulaski, pretty much. Like, just her, every time she sees Data, she talks down to him and says horrible things to him.
She does kind of shit on him a lot.
Like, if she didn't do that, I might not be so hard on her, but I'm just like, Data's like one of my favorite TNG characters. So I'm like, oh, you can't do that to Data. And it's not like the Bones Spock thing, because, like, you know Bones really likes Spock. I mean, they just kind of do it to get on each other's nerves.
Right.
But Data can't experience getting on nerves, so it's just mean. It just comes off as like he can't perceive it. I mean, Spock perceives it, but wants to ignore it because that's his prerogative. Data can't even perceive it because that's how he's programmed. So it doesn't come off the same as a Bones Spock thing.
Right, and it's sort of like when you watch these robots that are, like, they're working on and they're kicking them over and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, the Boston Institute robots, yeah.
Yeah, that's sort of how I feel about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, those people are related to Dr. Pulaski. Just kick them over. A robot, make them drop their box they're holding. Man!
And them and their children will be the first to die in the robot, in the robot revolution.
I seriously feel, I mean, like, it's crazy to feel bad for these weird ass looking robots, but it does, it's kind of mean.
It is a little mean, but moving on. Geordi decides that he's when they invite Dr. Pulaski and say, maybe we make a mesh up or do something different for a mystery that Data would have to figure out, that this would be a test of Data's deductive powers. And, they invite Pulaski to come and she accepts and they head down to the holodeck. And here's where Geordi makes his big faux pas. He tells the computer, make a enemy or a character capable of defeating Data. So
I love how it cuts to the bridge for a second and Worf's like, oh, I saw this huge power surge. It's gone now. It's fine. It's
gone now. Oh, my God. Somebody really flushed the toilet. It's plugging up all our sewer systems.
Must have been Worf's toilet. All that prune juice.
Exactly. Oh, Pulaski just used the toilet.
Oh, man.
So anyways, while they're going through the program and the adventures, Dr. Pulaski is kidnapped and they're trying to search her down and they find Professor James Moriarty as the person who's kidnapped her, her abductor, and that's when they confront her and confront him. So he's like in some back factory section and he is trying to obviously run some kind of plot against Sherlock Holmes, but he realizes that something's off because Professor Moriarty at one point sees Data and Geordi
at the arch.
Call up the arch.
But the thing is, he notices this before he's been given his super cognitive ability, which is really bizarre because you see him, they cut to him specifically watching them because he's watching Sherlock Holmes. But then he sees the arch when they call for it, and then that's when they make the program super hard.
Right.
I don't understand how he saw it before that.
I don't know. I kind of thought he saw it after that, but, I mean, I'll take your word for it.
I mean, I'm sure he did see it after, but he was following them. I mean, it was he saw the entire sequence. He saw it going up to – he saw them asking the question, and then he went up to it after it was done. So it was kind of the whole sequence, really, he was watching.
And his girlfriend, which was not Regina Barbara.
Not Regina. She was a prostitute named Budgina. No, I'm sorry.
Budgina.
I'm sorry. Pussy galore. Sorry.
No, it's Budgina.
Budgina with a B. or no. Fajita. A vagina. It's like a fajita.
You got to earn that R.
Okay. R is for regal.
And restricted. Anyways.
That's
so
true.
So
but was for banana.
Oh no.
That's what she does when she's not with men.
Oh man. Moriarty, what are you doing? What are you doing to yourself? Anyways,
getting
so
crabs.
She sees it as well as Moriarty and she goes, I don't know what it is, but I'm getting out of here.
I'm getting out of here.
Some kind of black magic it is.
Oh, that was so great. She's missing teeth and she's like, all right, she can barely speak eloquently at all. That's awesome.
I know. You can tell so many.
She's like the London equivalent of white trash.
Oh, yeah. She hangs out with Whitechapel with the Jack the Ripper. So.
Too bad it wasn't her dead, like later, because later just some random guy's dead on the street. It'd be funny if it was her, so they could have like a Jack the Ripper type thing going on.
Oh, that would have been cool.
That would have been really cool. Instead of just a random dead guy who was like just released from prison, that'd be cool, like tying a little bit of Jack the Ripper stuff in there. Because, I mean, I think part of Sherlock Holmes was kind of like written around that time and kind of like.
Oh, yeah.
Intertwined with that mythology a little bit in fiction.
Yeah, it's too bad we didn't get that. But so. So Moriarty goes to the arch and he starts getting information. Obviously, later on, like I said, he abducts Pulaski. And from there, when they track him down, he pulls up the arch again and says, what the hell is this? And they're like, how can you do that? So
he hands Data a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. Remember, this is holographic paper. Because this is important in about 2 seconds when Data storms off the holodeck with holographic paper in tow and then shows Geordi the picture of the holographic paper inside the hallways, which is outside of the holodeck.
Which should not exist.
Nope.
but somehow it does. But it's a picture of it's a drawing of the Enterprise. And he's like, "What is this?" So
I love how he shows it to Data upside down. I mean, he shows it to Geordi upside down. So when Geordi has it, flips it to the screen, it's right side up.
And doesn't Geordi's visor can't just see through the paper anyways?
Yeah, like, I don't see the
lead on it.
I don't understand how Geordi's visor works, because it seems like it's like Terminator vision or like the Predator vision, where he can like change the spectrum and like he can see like microscopic cracks in walls. How does he see like consoles to press buttons? It seems like his vision wouldn't be able to pick that up.
No, I think he can see the whole spectrum. So, but he can like regulate the spectrum what he can see.
Well, so just I mean, in the one episode, I think it's season one, where like they beam over to that ship and like and they plug. It's the one they use the plug in that shows Geordi's visor on the view screen, and it's like red and black garbage, as he can't see anything. Like, this is how you see, Geordi. How do you see anything?
Yeah, Picard's watching. Goes, Geordi, I can't see anything. It's just a bunch of red and black garbage anywhere. That's Riker.
Is that the scrambled porn channel?
No, that's Riker.
It looks like he's got the porn stash and everything. Like back in the turn up channel to 100 on basic, and you get that scrambled.
I'm well aware of the scrambled porn
channel. That was a good channel.
Good channel. Looking for a boob.
Searching for a boob.
Searching for what boob? And all I got was a vagina.
No.
Anyway, so so they bring this attention to Captain Picard. Moriarty takes over the ship, or he starts doing weird things to the ship, like
shakes the ship.
It's like, hey, let's shake the ship up.
He built this giant steampunk thing with a lever on it, and it just like changes the attitude of the ship left and right.
Makes no sense whatsoever how he would do that.
Makes no sense at all. He built some random contraption. I guess it's the only way he could figure out how to make a computer interface for the since he doesn't have computer parts in his hologram program.
Right. So from there, Picard decides he just goes down and talk to Professor Moriarty.
I love this. Picard's like, I'm going to get dressed up. I don't want him to ask questions about my uniform. Worf also gets dressed up, and I really wish there was a 80s montage for Worf getting dressed up, because Worf getting dressed up goes nowhere, because he doesn't even go on the holodeck.
As long as at some point when he puts on his pants, he splits his the britches of his pants, because he's like, oh.
His butt's ridged, and pants aren't made. They didn't
his, make... his butts are ridged.
He's ridged all the way down. You've seen his back, right? He's got all these ridges going down his back. I mean, his ass must be ridged too, right?
Ridged for his and her pleasure.
His and her pleasure.
Anyways, so he goes down there and he confronts Moriarty and basically saying, I realize that you understand you are a hologram on the holodeck. And he's saying, but I am conscious. I know. And he says the line, I think, therefore I am, to argue that he's alive. Picard's obviously recognizes that he's sentient, but he says, we just don't have, it's not possible with our technology to let you just run free. So what we'll do is we'll freeze this program. It won't seem like anything. And by the next time you come back, we'll have it all figured out. And he says goodbye to Pulaski. He promises to fill her full of crumpets.
I'm like, that's some weird sexual innuendo.
Yeah, because Moriarty and
her, they had to have done it, because like when Picard comes in the room, she's all sitting up and she's all disheveled. Like I'm pretty sure they were passing the time while they were waiting for Sherlock to come back.
Yeah, it's Victorian times. There's nothing to do.
Nope.
It's boring. Anyway, so and the USS Victory rendezvous with the Enterprise, and all is well. Well, now we're going to fast forward to
season six,
4 years later.
What's interesting, though, elementary, my dear Data, is in the Memory Alpha that there's a different ending. Originally, the ending was Picard knew that he could walk off the holodeck because the paper with the Enterprise was able to come off the holodeck. So, like, the safety routines or something like that had let that happen because it was the holodeck was so jacked up. So he knew he could walk off, but he just deceived him. And to say, hey, look, when you have to do this whole thing. But so they cut that part out.
but this still doesn't make any sense. They get a walk off.
It doesn't. I think, you know, but the reason they cut it was because they didn't want to make Picard look
more of like a dick.
Yeah, they didn't want to look, make him look deceitful. So that's why they cut it. They didn't cut it because of the techno stuff, but I mean.
Gotcha. Well, so when we get to Ship in the Bottle, we have Data and Geordi doing the Sherlock Holmes mystery again. And they're, you know, you catch them right in the middle of their, you know, he's unpacking a whole mystery. Data's figuring it all out. When he goes to throw something at the one of the guys that he thinks should be left-handed, but he unfortunately catches with his right hand. And Data's like, oh, that's strange. There must be something wrong with the holodeck program. And they call up Barclay.
Hey, Barclay, can you fix this?
Yeah, can you come fix it up? Can you come
why is he allowed to fix the holodecks when they're all so concerned of his, like, you know, video game holodeck addiction?
I know. It's like having someone with a gambling addiction and then sending him to, like, fix the slot machines in a gambling place. Like,
yeah,
fix these?
I can
fix some of these. Can I have a couple chips to put in?
Especially after he had, like, you know, Deanna Troi dressed up as Aphrodite, like, you know, sex god.
Yeah, absolutely.
And his, like, program and everyone else and all these weird things. Like, why would they let him near the holodeck? I don't know.
So as Barclay goes through with the programming, he sees that there's a issue with a glitch in one of their matrix diodes, and he runs the program, and who pops up is Professor James Moriarty. And Moriarty basically says, "Where's Captain Picard? I want to see him." And Barclay's like, "How?"
That's weird. You know people. That's weird.
And then he realizes that Moriarty knows that he is, you know, a hologram within, you know, the holodeck. So he says, I have to talk to Captain Picard. Bring him to me." So Barclay goes to Data and Geordi and says, "You know who I just ran into? I just ran into James Moriarty." And look on their faces were like, "Oh my god!"
Well, it was interesting because, like, he pulls the plug. He's like, "Well, I've got to finish my work here." So he pulls the plug, and he pretends to disappear, but he doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because he reappears right after Barclay leaves, and it's like, "Uh oh." Bad things are about to happen.
Well, I got a lot of issues with this, but I want to come back to this later. But anywho, so during this time, the Enterprise is going to watch two gas giants collide, and it's going to form a new star. So they're really close to this to watch the observe it, but then they're going to back off if it gets when it gets too crazy with the star forming. That's just sort of the background kind of thing going on.
Well, the thing is, like, one looks like a gas giant, the other one looks like a sun already. I'm like, that's doesn't look like a gas giant. It looks like a sun. Okay, but
cool. I didn't have a problem with it.
It looked cool, like them, like, starting to meld. I thought it was like a gas giant falling into a star. That's what it looked like to me. It was kind of cool seeing how they were going to start to stick together.
One of the things that Moriarty told Barclay was that he was aware at times of the passage of time. So he was aware.
He said he felt like it felt longer than 4 years. I'm like, that's weird.
Right. So when they come to Picard about this, Picard decides to go down to talk to Moriarty. And Moriarty was like, "I thought you were going to get this fixed for me. We're going to have this all figured out." And Picard is like, "Well, you have been trying to work it out, but we just don't have the answers for you, unfortunately, yet." And he says, "I did not know that you'd actually feel the passing of time during, you know, during being in the, you know, as stored in the holodeck programs."
He's like, "That shouldn't happen. That's not scientifically, you're not getting any power. You shouldn't notice anything."
Right. And that's one of the issues that I have with this is there's some weird stuff going on.
Well, I mean, Barclay does say, like, you know, maybe there's some kind of glitch in the matrix that, like, you know, triggered some power going to your node or something that may have made you feel like there was some time.
Right. Well, so Moriarty says, again, brings up the "I think, therefore I am." So he decides that he says, "Because I am aware, I should be able to walk out of this holodeck right now." And Picard's like, "It's just not possible." And he throws a book through and it just disappears. And he goes, "But I am not an inanimate object. I am an actual person, a being. I should be able to." And Picard's like, "Once you walk through there, you will die." But he walks through and he's fine. And he starts walking down the hallway.
I love how this episode's like a mind trip.
It is a mind trip.
Especially the first time you see it. Like, I knew kind of what was going on because I've seen it a couple times. And I was like, okay, this is where the shenanigans start.
Right. Shenanigans. I call shenanigans. And I would have been, if I was Picard, I would have been saying, I call shenanigans right now.
Yeah, like, I'm sort of surprised that he believed that at face value.
Yeah, exactly, because there's no possible way. But from there, they go to Dr. Crusher in sickbay. She checks him out because besides some unusualness in his DNA, he's perfectly fine. And Moriarty says, I wish to go above deck, and I want to see what the ship's like. And so he brings them to 10 forward, and he goes, we're on a starship. We're not on a ship. And
We're in space.
So Moriarty's obviously, you know, amazed by all this. But then he brings
out of his element.
He's out of his element, and he wants to catch up. He wants to learn so much about everything that's going on.
But I can't learn anything without Regina.
Regina Bartholomew.
Bartholomew.
Countess Regina Bartholomew.
Barf.
Oh, Jesus. Well,
just, that's from Spaceballs. Barf, his full name is Bartholomew. So Regina Barf.
That's Countess to you.
Countess Regina Barf, I'm sorry.
Anyways, so he says, I was programmed that she is my everything, my soulmate, you know, my love of my life. And I would really like to have her, you know, with me on this journey. And Picard's like, well, that's great, but I don't think we can bring her out right now because I don't think it's going to work. I don't think we can actually do the same thing that just happened. Because we don't even understand how it happened. So Moriarty's a little like, are you going to just make me wait for another 4 years or however long it takes?
Let's call more shenanigans because Moriarty knows he's not off the holodeck.
No, no. I mean, Moriarty's just duping everybody right now.
It's really smart though, because I mean, like, you know, if you're watching the episode the first time, you're like, what?
Oh yeah, it doesn't make any sense. So, Picard basically says, "We'll get Regina soon, but just let's be safe about it. Let's figure out what's going on." So, they're in the observation. I mean, they're in
conference room.
The conference room. Thank you very much. And they're talking about all the issues that's going on.
And they all agree we should wait on this.
We should wait. But unfortunately, all of a sudden, the ship is no longer under control at the bridge.
It does the shake again.
Mm-hmm. There's the shimmy shake.
Like, this happened 4 years ago when we saw Moriarty. He's really good at shaking the rocking the boat.
Yeah, don't.
I do not want him for a canoe partner.
No.
Worst canoe partner ever.
Moriarty shows up on the bridge and he goes, Captain, I want Regina. And Picard's like, we all want Regina, okay? Can we just please give me back my ship?
Give me back my ship. We don't wanna die. He's like, well, I'm just a fictional character. What have I got to lose?
Right. And you know, Picard says, look, we're real close to these planets. We gotta back away. And he goes, well, this would be a great time for you to try to figure out how to beam Regina off the holodeck.
Because, you know, deadlines are a wonderful motivator.
Yeah. So he has Picard and Data, Barclay, and Geordi working on it and trying to figure this out. So they use this
the pattern enhancers
to try to beam a chair out. And this is where Data figures out that
things are not what they seem,
which is weird because if you think about it, like, why didn't the computer actually just like go through and just maybe because it didn't have any information to give Data? But Moriarty must have figured out that he would have been getting a readout. So basically, when the chair tried to beam through and didn't work, they were like, well,
let's check the logs. Nothing there.
And Data's reading the logs like, there's nothing here. It says, well, something's going on. And then all of a sudden he realizes that all this is, we are still in the holodeck.
And then he throws something at Geordi, and Geordi catches it with his left hand when he's right-handed.
Right.
And Picard's like, what, really? We've been in the holodeck the entire time? Yes.
I didn't see through this. I've outwitted Q more than once.
But getting duped by a bunch of holograms.
Oh. Right.
He's like, well, so when I scored with Beverly last night, it wasn't real? Damn it.
Damn, that's not true.
Oh.
So
I've got some explaining to do.
You got some splaining to do. So he goes to – Picard goes to Regina and talks to her
about – Tries to make a deal with her.
Says, look, we think we can get the Heisenberg compensators. If we do some – make some changes on it, we could actually beam you off. So Moriarty contacts Riker in the real world to say, if you do these things,
you can get us off the holodeck and we'll leave you alone forever.
Right. And we'd like to, once they beam them off, supposedly beam them off the holodeck, they want a shuttlecraft and they want to just fly away. He says, just leave us alone. We just want to fly away.
I want to get away.
I want to fly away.
In a shuttlecraft.
Yeah. So they take off. At the same time, the whole holodeck, Picard and Data and Barclay are like end program and then end program. And they are like in a
holodeck-ception.
Within a holodeck. So it's like Inception. And Barclay pulls out like a storage piece out of the arch.
It looks really cool. It's like this weird layered cube.
Yeah. And then he puts them in some machine and they basically say, hey, this machine can keep their adventures going without actually being a hologram, and they can go on adventures for the rest of their lives for as long as they know.
And then they, you know, laugh and like, oh, you know, some people say, what if our, you know, life is just some, you know, hologram or some simulation in someone's box on someone's desk.
And yeah.
Then they all walk off and Barclay's still there. He's like, end program.
End program. Which is great. So that was the two episodes in a nutshell. I mean, both episodes are really worth watching. They're very fun. But Dave, after seeing both of them back to back, what was your takeaway and feelings about these two episodes?
I think these episodes are even more enjoyable watching them back to back as opposed to watching them over, you know, that 4-season gap.
Yeah, because you could forget.
Yeah, interestingly, that 4-year gap was because there was like some kind of like rights issue with the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle thing.
Really?
That's why it took so long to make a sequel, because there was some kind of like required, you know, licensing thing that they had to pay. Huh. And then they just wanted to do it again. They approached him again. I guess they said it was some kind of misunderstanding that it's actually a really reasonable deal to get and the rights to, you know, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's, you know, a licensing agreement to use these characters. So, wow. At first they thought it was public domain because it's been such a long time, but it was still under, you know, copyright or something. So then they had to get permission for the second time. That's why it took so long, according to Memory Alpha.
Right, right. Interesting. Well, the thing with me is I saw this and I kind of felt like because they hadn't brought Moriarty back, I kind of think it was kind of a dick move. You know, especially by Picard, without actually addressing it. I mean, basically,
they never like did anything about it, and they didn't reference it ever. The episode, like you're saying, it was like a dick move by Picard, and like it's almost like it used the original ending and not the ending that we got from Elementary, My Dear Data.
Mm-hmm. But not just that. It's just I felt like sort of like you literally have a sentient being living inside your ship, and you know. I would think that would be like a pretty important, like you'd have some top scientists working on that. Now, maybe there were and like on the Enterprise the whole time. And that's all they were working on for the last 4 years. You know?
I mean, he said people were working on it, but I mean, it could have been, but I mean, he could have been lying. We don't know because we never saw anything.
Sure. Exactly. So anyways, that was concerning for me. And the other thing I I mean, basically, I mean, when we see the Doctor from Voyager, and then we, and obviously Moriarty in this, I mean, they are sentient people, but they are sentient only through the Starship's, you know, computer files. I mean, the computer processing on these ships. So is an Enterprise, is a Voyager, any big starships, are they actually capable of making sentient life?
It appears that they are, but the thing is, I mean, you know, sure, like the crew of the Voyager had to accept, you know, that the Doctor was real because that's all they had. And then he had a mobile emitter, and that made him even seem more real. And then he, you know, kept adding to his programming and, you know, gave himself junk so he could procreate. And he did all this weird stuff. Like, he because, you know, more and more became a person, but that's one of the biggest downfalls of Voyager to me is, like, we never got to see what happened to the Doctor when they got happened. Did he get stripped of his personhood? Like, what happened? Like, could Janeway and anyone have done anything to stop, you know, anything bad happening to the Doctor once they got home? Like, well, we never got to see any of that explored.
Well, we did. I mean, we did see a brief window in the very last episode. They have a party and you know, the Doctor's walking around and he's got a, I don't know if it was girlfriend or wife, but, you know, he was just a man about town. So, you know, he did become somewhat of a person at that point.
No, but like the last shot you see, I thought it was just the ship flying over San Francisco.
Well, yeah, but that was when Janeway got them back. This was the whole, the last two-parter of Voyager was, you know, kind of a flashback of everything.
Yeah. Oh, so you mean before Janeway left?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But I mean, but that's the thing. Like, they, you know, that was years later. But I mean, the immediate fallout, you know, I mean, I guess he got his personhood back. But I mean, that timeline was canceled out when Janeway did what she did in Endgame. So, mm-hmm. I mean, like, who knows, like, what would have happened if they got back on time? Because, I mean, the original Endgame, you know, she gets back. It takes them, like, 70 years to whatever to get back, even though it's only 8. But whatever, it takes them 70 years to get back. And then she comes back in time so she can get them back quicker.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, but so, by that time, I mean, like, they probably had other sentient holograms, so it wasn't that big a thing. But since they got them back, like, you know, 60 years early, mm-hmm. or 63 years early, like, maybe it would have been a completely different landscape. I mean, he would have been an anomaly. What would they have done to him? You know, it would have been completely different.
And on top of that is, you know, did they let Moriarty free? Or is he still in that box?
Who knows? Or did they, you know, did they, like, replicate the mobile emitter once he got back? Like, it'd just be weird. Like, all these different holograms running around.
I just don't even understand how Voyager can cobble together a mobile emitter, but Data and Geordi can't figure that shit out with Barclay.
Voyager did not cobble together a mobile emitter. They stole it from a guy who had technology from the 29th century.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Gotcha. All right.
It was in that two-part episode with Sarah Silverman. The guy crashed his ship, and the Bill Gates-type character from the 19th or 20th century, he made that with the 29th century technology that we found.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, Sarah Silverman was in two episodes of Star Trek Voyager. We'll have to do that one soon, maybe.
Yeah. But, yeah, so, I mean, it brings up a lot of ethical things going on that, I mean, even the use of the holodeck to bring up that you could create a character and there wouldn't be any fail-safes on the thing to stop it from creating sentient life. I mean, I just don't understand how nobody could figure out that that would be part of the parameters.
Well, it is a strange, you know, dilemma and problem, and, like, you know, but I mean the ship's main computer, like, I mean, that isn't even sentient. How can it create sentient life just by being given a command? Or does it have, like, a scan of data? Like, was data more or less copied into the Moriarty character to make,
right,
you know, like, was his, like, positronic brain, like, somehow scanned into the computer to make something equal? You know what I mean? Like, because I don't see how, like, the non-sentient Enterprise computer could create life on its own without having a template. You know what I mean?
I don't get that either. I mean, I understand they could probably write a program that's going to be pretty advanced.
To mimic sentience.
Yeah, but is it sentient life? And I don't know. And the fact that they can, you know, that he could measure, I mean, he felt time pass and he was disembodied. It just seems just off the wall to me that that's even a possibility. I mean, so that would mean that Moriarty was technically for the last 4 years floating around Enterprise's computers, kind of, you know.
Like a ghost, almost.
Yeah, yeah, like a ghost. Very good. Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. It seems like it's so latent with bad ethical decisions on Picard's side. Which is unusual for Picard.
Yeah, it really is unusual that it would be something that Picard would do, and which is why they changed the ending to Elementary, My Dear Data. It just makes me feel like they kind of went with the original ending of Elementary, My Dear Data to go with the opening for this episode, or, you know, how this episode closed anyway.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make everyone kind of seem like a dick. But, I mean, like, it was the only way to save the ship, though. So, I mean... You kind of have to be a dick to a hologram if you're going to kill 1,000 people. I mean, we just did the episode with, you know, the Jem'Hadar. Right. And, you know, 1,000 people died to save not even a captain and a bartender.
And the bartender.
I mean, and his kid and the nephew of the bartender. I mean, that's not a fair trade when you're talking about, you know, life. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
1,000 people died to save 2 people.
Yeah.
Like, that's like really bad odds.
The needs of the many exceed the needs of the few or the one.
Yeah, exactly. And this is the complete opposite. It's like, what?
Yeah. I don't know. So,
I mean, I'm not saying they shouldn't have been saved, but I mean, just saying, like, you know, was the price worth it? It was like, whoa, it doesn't seem right or fair, you know, ethically, you know. But they didn't know they were going to get kamikaze, but still, it's just like, whoa. I mean, that's partially what makes that scene even, like, more stand out. It's like, wow.
Right, right.
They weren't even saving, like, an admiral or the president. It was just, like, a commander and a bartender.
No, it doesn't make a lot of sense, for sure. But so, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's the leap that the logical leap that a ship could make a sentient life seems insane to me in the Star Trek world. Not saying it's not possible. It just seems hard to believe. And then the fact that Picard just kind of then just puts him in a box and says, you know, live your life that way, asshole. You know, I don't know. I don't know. It just seems weird to me. It seems so unlike Picard and so unlike Star Trek to leave the stories the way they are. So,
yeah.
And we don't get Moriarty back ever again.
Ever again. And, you know, we could have if, you know, the people in Voyager and Deep Space Nine didn't hate each other, allegedly.
Right.
It is an interesting world. It's just, and then with the Doctor too, it's just so, such a weird thing. I mean, you know, we had the Measure of a Man episode for Data, you know, assigning him personhood or not. But, and I want to say Voyager had like a Measure of a Man-esque episode for the Doctor. I want to say they did something like that. I can't remember if they did or not, but I want to say they did.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, does the rest of Starfleet adhere to that? Like, it's, you know, it's just what, you know, what would happen? And like, you know, and this is just the part of Star Trek we see. How many other sentient life forms are accidentally created on other starships in the Star Trek universe?
Right. I mean,
we've followed, like, what, 3 ships, you know, a couple different Enterprises, and then, you know, Voyager, and then, you know, Deep Space Nine. It's mind blowing. There's the kind of things that they bring up. And that's one of the great things about Star Trek. They bring up these really oddball things that make you think.
And I mean, sooner or later, I can't imagine that we wouldn't come up with something that's going to resemble, if not be sentient, with just our technology at some point. I mean, maybe it'll be 50 years from now, 100 years from now with our computers, but will we be in some kind of, you know, video game type of situation, and these video game programmers have actually programmed sentient life by accident, you know, especially with online gaming. Could there be like just some kind of character that's actually surviving, bouncing around people's homes, playing in those games, you know? I don't know.
I personally think we're a long, long way. I don't know if that's going to be in our lifetime. I mean, it could.
Well, like
be.
Like I said, I said 50 to 100 years.
I mean, I've looked at the singularity graph and how artificial intelligence is shooting up and up and up and up. As far as for video games go, because I do play my fair share of video games. Like artificial intelligence in games is bad. It's still really bad.
I'm not saying it's going to happen in video games, but like, what if it was, you know, and like,
sure. I mean, cause Holodeck is an extension of video games. I mean, I get what you're coming from, but I'm just saying like just from personal experience in that world, like game artificial intelligence isn't all that great.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And even on games where they try to make things super lifelike, it's still things have limited responses or limited number of actions. They don't really break out of three or four different things they can do.
But let's stretch it out. Let's say 50 years from now, and we have now virtual reality or something to that nature, where we are actually immersed reality, simulated reality, video games. You know, that's a very strong possibility that there could be be living in that life.
I mean, 50 years from now, in technological terms, that's like thousands of years. Because I mean, we had 30 years ago, we had Atari and SNES, and now we have near photorealistic looking things. I mean, so technology has evolved massively in 30 years. Yeah. So now that things are looking close to photorealistic, maybe in the next 50, that's where artificial intelligence will start coming in. Skynet, we're doomed.
Skynet. Yeah, but I guess my point being is we're obviously video games are always pushing the envelope of tech and things like that. So. Sure. I'm not saying it's going to happen in video games. I'm just saying I could see something like that happening. Like, what if they made a character that, somehow became sentient through not just through the video game itself, but through the whole internet of accessing information and, or what if the internet itself becomes one giant sentient brain,
I'd almost kind of welcome a sentient internet. That way it could tell us what news is fake and what news is not fake.
Or could it be lying to us and just having us drive into giant blenders and turn us into just puree?
It could, but I don't know. It'd be nice to have something tell us what's real news and fake news. It's like, oh, internet's like, no, I'm not going to show fake news today. Or maybe it'll only show fake news. No.
Just to placate us.
Oh, man, that'd be bad.
Everything's fine.
I don't want the sentient internet.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of problems that could come with a sentient, a whole internet that becomes sentient. But
I think we have so many doomsday movies and TV shows and video games about artificial intelligence getting smart and taking over. I would think that since it's something on our mind and our fiction, that the people who are working on things in real life are putting countermeasures in place, or Isaac Asimov's robot laws of robotics into code or something.
I would say so too, but here's the thing. Two things with that. One, I don't think they're thinking about what if sentient life just evolved within something outside of any kind of planning, So what if it did happen
I don't know if things can happen like that on accident.
I'm not saying it's going to, but I'm saying in 100
what
years.
What if it, yeah, I mean.
So then who knows? And secondly, I think we give people way too much credit. Every time I run into people who I think are going to be way smarter and think much more than me, and I'm not saying I'm a genius by any stretch of the imagination, there always seems to be people go, oh yeah, we didn't do that. Or no, we thought about doing that, but we forgot to. I'm like, what? Obviously just look at our government today.
In the year 2000. We talked about before the show last week, talking about Y2K stuff.
Yeah, it seems bizarre that these things aren't actually being handled correctly. I mean, there's all sorts of problems that come about. And you're like, because we didn't have funding for this, so we didn't actually get around to it. It's like, what? So
yeah, that's a fair point for sure.
I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just saying it makes me worried.
Oh yeah, I mean I understand. I mean the thing is, I mean the way technology changes today from a couple of years ago. I mean, just it's hard to even guess what 50 years from now would look like.
I was just thinking about just today about, you know, around the year 2000, 2001 time period, and just tech from then and tech from now. It's like you can't even like it's not even comparable, you know. I mean, and we're only talking, you know, like 17, 16 years.
I mean, I remember 1995 getting my dad got a brand new computer, his Compact Presario. It had 1.5 gigabytes of data. And, you know, on the hard drive. And it's like, you can never use that. It was inconceivable that you could ever fill up a gigabyte of data. And now, right. Like, I go through 2 gigabytes of data on my phone or more a month. It's just...
Hell, I mean...
It's insane. I mean, like, from a computer to your cellular data, it's just insane. And, you know, in 20 years...
Just remember floppy disks going to, jump drives or thumb drives. You know, I remember thumb drive having like, 516K or whatever it is, you know, was like huge because it's like half a gig, you know. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, there's so much memory. I can put so much in. Now you can have things that are like, you know, it's mind blowing. And it's in the next 20 years, it's going to be even crazier. So
it is going to be crazier, but Moore's law has held constant for 20 something years now or longer. But I've been reading the different tech sites and blogs and things that Moore's law is actually starting to slow down because of like things have to exist in real life and things, you know, heat and different things are it's hard to keep Moore's law on track now because the transistors have gotten so small, they're shrinking dies and all this stuff. Like at the point, like it's hard to make things physically smaller, you know what I mean? And still have the same number of transistors.
This is where I think quantum computing is going to be the next thing. I know it's still a stretch of the imagination, but I do think that if you can have, instead of the idea of a circuit, an on and off circuit, if you could have multiple, instead of on and off, up and down, kind of like, you know, things like that. It's going to be completely different.
I have a hard time wrapping my head around, you know, regular coding, which is, you know, just uses binary. I can't imagine coding on like, you know, on a trinary system, you know, on, off, and both.
Yeah.
That just hurts my head thinking about it. And I mean, quantum computers, I mean, I remember talking with my friends about quantum computers in like the 90s. I mean, it's been a thing people have been talking about for a while. But also silicon, I listened to an article or saw something on a YouTube channel that silicon is actually starting to, you know, not become as useful anymore. Just because, like, you know, our technology has kind of outpaced silicon as far as, you know, how computers are built. And there's got to be, you know, new and better materials to be able to conduct electricity and make things better and faster going forward to keep Moore's law going if they're going to. It's not going to be done in silicon. It's going to be done in something else. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head.
Right. But my only point is that it's like I do think we're going to have to make a jump to a different way of computing, period. You know, sooner or later to increase everything. So,
yeah, I mean, quantum computing is absolutely fascinating.
We are definitely not there yet.
No.
At this point in, you know, 2017, we are not even close there.
I just think it's bizarre that I remember talking with my friends about it in like the 90s or early 2000s. Like it's still like it was a concept that long ago and it's still, you know, we don't even have any practical applications of it yet as far as I'm aware.
No, we're definitely not. And apparently there's a whole bunch of other reasons why it's not working too, because there's a... I guess they have to make containment rooms for them because, you know, other kind of subatomic particles can actually enter into the areas and they can fuck everything up, I guess. That's what I've read about. So, I mean, it's really crazy, you know. It's hard to even, like, I mean, like, it's hard to wrap my brain around it, you know, so.
Well, I mean, one of the other things they're talking about, and not just storage, about, I mean, not just computing power, but storage, they're talking about, you know, encoding data onto DNA.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Like, because you could store so much. I mean, because DNA is what makes everyone up, you know, every little thing about them. So, I mean, like, if they can, you know, start storing regular data in DNA, that's just going to be crazy. Like, in a, you know, 15 or 20 years, we've got, like, oh, I've got my DNA drive here. It holds, like, you know, 30,000 exabytes.
Yeah.
No, it's just, like...
Yeah, there's definitely...
It's hard to wrap your head around that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there's, you know, DNA computing, chemical computing. I mean, there's lots of different stuff that could be done as well. I mean, I'm not up on all this, but I'm sure there's some huge brainiac scientists working in some laboratories right now trying to figure all this shit out. But I don't know. I just I'm not saying that we it's impossible to I'm not saying it is possible that there will be a sentient life coming from technology, but if it does, you know, I don't know. I mean, like, I could see it happening, and maybe we wouldn't notice it right away.
Sure. I mean, I know different people are really frightened about that. Like, where computers are going to get away from us, and, you know, how we, you know, people are saying we have to become cyborgs so we can, like, you know, work as fast as the computers do, you know, in the future. Like, you know, are we going to turn ourselves into the Borg?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And some people make the idea that the human form is actually more like the caterpillar form, and our next form will actually be the butterfly form, will be the you know, us meshing with computers somehow.
Oh, that's so, that stinks, because butterflies don't live very long. Once that's like the shortest form of the life.
Well,
is that when we blow ourselves up,
or maybe we move on to the next plane of existence,
become a Q?
Yeah, something to that nature.
But it's interesting, like you know, the Fermi paradox.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a video that said one of the reasons for the Fermi paradox may be that, you know, technology, you know, people just, they just get to this technology, instead of like branching out, they just end up destroying themselves, which is why, you know, the Fermi is one of the possible reasons why the Fermi paradox is a thing. Like, once they reach our level and then they start going above, they just end up destroying themselves, and that's like, oh man, that's depressing.
Right. Yeah. There's like certain, what do they call it? Are they gates or gateways where they, that you can hit, that you might not actually get through those. I forgot what they called. They're not called gateways or something to that nature, but it's like, idea like
eras of existence or whatever.
Yeah. Like basically like there's disease, nuclear war, all sorts of things like to that nature that we could come across. And if, you know,
famine or gamma, another one was like gamma ray bursts, because gamma ray bursts can be like hundreds of light years across, and gamma ray bursts are just crazy deadly. They're just like a shot in the dark. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they can fry life from ridiculously far, you know, away. It's just like, you know, we could all be dead tomorrow from a, you know, a gamma ray burst, and we wouldn't know.
Or will we all turn into the Incredible Hulk?
A world planet Hulk is here, folks.
That would be awesome.
the
planet would be completely pulverized and we're all punching each other.
We can't stop it. No, but yeah, lots of it's just interesting, like, just listening to the theories about why the Fermi paradox is what it is. Yeah. It's depressing too. It's like, uh-huh.
Oh, didn't make it. Well, we've gone a long way from Professor Moriarty.
We have, but it just
spotlighted the Incredible Hulk.
The Incredible Hulk, yeah. Just artificial intelligence in general. It spawns just interesting things. And the holodeck episodes are always fun. And I don't know if they were always as thought-provoking as this one, but this one was definitely one of the more thought-provoking ones, I believe.
Yeah, sometimes they're just funny romps. But yeah, this is definitely it's thought-provoking, but also just really, especially Ship in the Bottle, is just a really well-written story and, you know, well put together.
Very well written. I was reading the Memory Alpha, and they were saying, like, the production crew, like, were writing their own notes to figure out what was happening because of, like, the world within a world within a world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like what you were saying.
When they were making it, they were confused, which is funny.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And the guy who wrote this, I mean, he's one of these guys that we've talked about before, Rene Ashivara. And he, you know, he's written The Offspring, iBorg, True Q, tons of, you know, trials and tribulations, tons of good. I mean, just a huge amount of writing credits behind him. So
really great episodes.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a ton. So he's a good writer. So,
and speaking of The Offspring, we should be talking about that next week with Michelle Specht if all goes to plan.
If we still don't have the disease.
The disease.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's a good episode. I highly recommend, especially if you have the moment, you know, like if you have like a little more than an hour, you know, an hour and 30 some minutes, because I think they're both like 40 minutes long. Like
40, 45 minutes long, yeah.
Yeah, if you can watch Elementary, My Dear Data, and A Ship in a Bottle, I mean, watch them back to back. It's really fun.
It's really fun watching them back to back. I mean, they're great episodes individually, and watching them with their seasons, they're both, you know, decent, really good points in the seasons. But watching them back to back was just so good. It just, there's something about it. It just, it really was like a perfect two-parter that wasn't, you know, it was four seasons apart.
And I don't think it was thought of as a two-parter, more of a callback. But when you put them back to back and watch them as like part one, part two, it's just awesome. So, yeah, definitely do that.
Yeah, go ahead and give that a look, guys. It's a lot of fun, you know. And then maybe you can speak with your Star Trek friends or mention us. And, you know, if you've got any other kind of conspiracy theory or, you know, technology is going to destroy us all, or, you know, what do you think is going to happen in the future? You can always email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com, or, you know, message us on the group, the facebook.com/group/synthaholics.
Yeah, let us know what you think Moriarty's doing with Regina right now.
Oh, they're diddling.
Maybe.
They just blew up a big mattress in the back of that shuttlecraft. And
man, I think of all the fun you could be having just flying through the universe, you know.
On a shuttlecraft, running across some Ferengi or Klingons or Borg, and they're just going to mess up your day.
Yeah.
I wonder if the Borg were programmed into that computer cube. That'd be funny. Yeah.
Actually, you know, you think about Moriarty doing that. I mean, he could be sort of like the Doctor Who, you know, running around the universe, causing havoc Star Trek universe.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, kind of more of an evil Doctor Who, of course, but
I mean, they could have done like a whole bottle episode of just like his crazy adventures. They'd not even show the Enterprise crew.
Yeah, it would be really awesome. Yeah.
Him and Regina running around causing havoc.
Come on, Regina.
Oh, man. Like, I really want to see them go to Ryza. Because, like, you know, they're like, you know, 18th century British sensibilities and like going on a planet where everyone's screwing each other, and then like the people who work on the planet are also there to screw you.
Hey, Regina wore slacks at one point, and she loved it. So
she did love those slacks on the African safari.
It's hard to get back to a corset.
She did not want to go back to wearing a corset. Well, I can't blame her.
No, I can't either. But yeah, so definitely let us know what you think. What you think of the whole dilemma of this, and what do you think Moriarty's doing with Regina? And on top of that, if you get a chance, other than an email, you could also just do a voice message and send it to us by sending a recording audio clip and sending it to our synthaholics@yahoo.com email address. We'd love to play that on the episode as well.
And that way we can respond to it and, you know, voice our opinions to your opinion. We had a lot of fun doing that with our 100th episode. We'd love to get more of those and do those, you know, sporadically during the year.
Absolutely. So, yeah.
You can follow me on social media at David_J_Duncan. All our music is provided by Warp 11, except for the beginning. That's provided by who?
Dave Wilkes.
He's got my name. I should remember that. Their music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. The show's at Synthaholic Duo on Twitter. Guy Davis is at GS Davis Art on Twitter.
I'm at Blackbird 2004.
Yeah, I misspelled it that way once.
Yes.
Rate us on iTunes. We need those stars and we need those reviews so we can be seen in that old artificial intelligence iTunes algorithm. Every podcast you listen to says the same thing, and it's said for a very good reason. It is absolutely important for us. It's huge.
Take 5 minutes, give us 5 stars, write a review, you know, let people know. And if you have a couple bucks to throw our way, we appreciate it. You could go to Patreon at patreon.com/Synthaholics and, you know, give us a buck if you can, just to help us pay for our cost of, you know, giving you this free podcast.
Yeah, we're running the show. We got the, you know, monthly cost with the web hosting and the yearly cost with the you know, website. And, you know, anything extra will help us get out to, you know, cons and everything so we can interact with you guys in person, hopefully. Because we love meeting people. We love going to conventions and talking Star Trek with people. It's a lot of fun. And if you heard our episode a couple episodes ago, you got to hear a little bit of that from our local con here.
Yeah, we appreciate it. And it would be extremely helpful if you know people who love Star Trek, love podcasts, let them know about the episode, our show, Synthaholics. Tell them that we talk about Professor Moriarty and his companion Regina flying through the universe. People want to know these things. People want to hear these things. I want to hear about these things.
And our name babblings about artificial intelligence.
Yes, absolutely. Who doesn't? So yeah, let people know about Synthaholics. Let them, you know, say, hey, there's this great podcast, Synthaholics. Talk about Star Trek. Talk about Regina.
They make us laugh. Listen. They even podcast when they're sick. I mean, they're just good all around guys.
Oh, we're the best guys. The best guys.
The best. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you for being here, supporting the show. Live long and prosper, one and all. We'll see you next week, and hopefully it'll be awesome. We're all puking and sinking. Shit up pants, you're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Regina.
Reginio, Reginio. Wherefore art thou, Reginio?
Reginio. Oh my, so much Regina jokes.
Oh, we said Regina a couple times.
We should have a game. How many times Regina was said?
That's the drinking game. Every time Synthaholics say Regina, take a drink.
Regina.
He's good at the musics. Count Basie.
Count Basie. Count Basie's Basie. Orchestra.
Count Basie's.
Yeah, he's good at the musics. How are you feeling?
I'm still sick. It's weird. Like, I feel like shit in the morning, and then as the day goes on, I feel less and less crappy.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've had.
Still like sniffling and coughing though. Just that I had a fever earlier, so took some Motrin and got that down.
Did you have dribble dick?
No, I didn't have that.
Because that's a sure sign of Ebola.
Oh, I didn't know that.